Okay, good morning. So my name is Laura Kahn, and I am presenting a paper that I've done with a couple of colleagues from the Harvard School of Public Health. And the paper is called Facing the Double Burden of Disease, an Innovative Approach to Addressing Chronic Diseases by Harnessing Reproductive and Maternal Healthcare Platforms. So I was told I needed to disclose something, and I have nothing to disclose. So why should we care about NCDs, and what are NCDs? So non-communicable diseases are degenerative chronic diseases, and there was a report that came out in 2010 by the WHO on the status of non-communicable diseases. And so they broadly categorized NCDs as cardiovascular disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, most cancers, and diabetes. And so those four, they said, were associated with four family, like a family of four risk factors, essentially, and that is tobacco use, poor diet, sedentary lifestyle, and alcohol abuse. And so all of these, you know, and we've been talking a lot at this conference about prevention, are related to the epidemiological and nutritional transitions in developed countries, where these transitions arguably have been completed, and in developing countries as well. And so, of course, the epidemiological transition is this transfer from sort of whole grain, whole foods to more processed foods and sort of supermarket shopping. And the nutritional, so that's the nutritional transition, and the epidemiological transition is the move from communicable diseases like typhoid and malaria and dengue to more chronic diseases like these NCDs, cardiovascular disease, et cetera. And so these, the epidemiological and nutritional transitions are driving a lot of issues with high health burdens and a dual burden of disease in some countries that are sort of stuck in the middle of these transitions. And so they still have a burden of communicable diseases, but are really experiencing a higher and increasing burden of non-communicable diseases. And this is related to globalization, it's related to industry, as industry, for example, big food and tobacco moves out of developed countries where their markets are shrinking and into developing countries. So this is resulting in a high health and economic burden, and especially in low and middle income countries, there's some concerns about younger age of onset of NCDs, and at lower levels of development, of course, because they're still low and middle income countries, and this lack of robust health system surveillance and awareness to sort of deal with this burgeoning epidemic. And so 80% actually of non-communicable diseases take place in low and middle income countries. And as you can sort of see from the graph on the right, the bar is super high in the low and middle income countries, and a little bit less high in low income countries, which are still contending with communicable diseases that kill a lot of kids, for example. And 63% of the world's annual deaths are due to NCDs. And so again, I would argue that this is something that we need to really be concerned about. And as I mentioned before, it's the premature deaths that are happening in some of the low and middle income countries that are really very concerning. And so these are deaths from NCDs under 60 years of age, and these are depriving a workforce of workers. They're depriving families of parents, especially when, you know, breadwinners are dropping dead of a heart attack at age 45. You know, kids are becoming potentially, you know, kids in one-parent families, for example. And so it's the premature deaths, I think, that are particularly concerning. And so in this paper, we argue, because I work with the Women in Health Initiative at the Harvard School of Public Health, that it's really important to focus on women when we're considering interventions, programs, and policies to combat non-communicable diseases. And so why is that important? And so women are disproportionately exposed to many of the NCD risk factors. So indoor air pollution, for example, they cook over stoves, they cook inside, and they're very much exposed to indoor particulate matter, which is related to chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder. Also, there's issues with exercise in some of the low and middle income countries. It's not culturally appropriate, it's not safe, it's just not done. And also poor diet. So women in many of the low and middle income countries eat least, they eat last, and they don't really know a lot about nutrition, for example. And so even if they cook the food, they don't really know what the connection is between sugar and body weight and fat and body weight and risk of cardiovascular disease, for example, because they may have very low levels of literacy. And so, interestingly, also, poor sexual health is linked to a risk of NCDs, another reason to focus on women and be concerned about reproductive and maternal health. And so one example is that risky sex, of course, is associated with contracting the human papillomavirus, which results in cervical cancer, which is a chronic cancer. Also, it goes sort of the other way. So overweight can be linked to maternal obesity. And I'm not an MD, and any MDs or nurses in the room, please correct me if this is wrong. But maternal obesity or overweight can result in some adverse pregnancy situations and sort of risk of a cesarean section, for example. And, you know, of course, women's low literacy, they lack knowledge of early signs and symptoms. Both women and their doctors, too, even in developed countries, don't really understand, for example, that symptoms of a heart attack just manifest differently in men and women. And then women, of course, play a pivotal role in their family's nutrition and hygiene. So again, another reason with the burgeoning, what's been called an epidemic of non-communicable diseases in these low and middle income countries, it's really important to consider women's role in prevention, management, and treatment. So what should we do? So the global health community really should meet the NCD challenge in an efficient, timely, and equitable manner. And I think the global health community in some ways has woken up to the fact that this is happening and it's going to get worse and it's going to potentially affect communities and families and economies even more than we're seeing now. And so there was this UN high-level summit on NCDs in 2011, and that was the second summit ever on a health issue. The first was HIV/AIDS. And so, unfortunately, very few goals and targets and activities came out of the summit. And so we're still sort of waiting for more action, I think. And We would argue that this rising burden of NCDs is an opportunity to look at vertical programs and horizontal programs, so vertical being siloed programs specifically for a health issue, for example, HIV/AIDS is sort of the classic, then look at horizontal programs and see if there can be some integration. So if we think of maybe NCD prevention and treatment as some kind of a vertical program, but just not overlaying that onto a health system, requiring systems to do more reporting, do more budgeting, do more monitoring and evaluation, but driving health system improvements with the integration of a vertical program, that's what Jaime Sepulveda has called a diagonal approach, where you're integrating both a vertical and a horizontal program to drive improvements in the health system as a whole. So what is the diagonal approach? It's just what I described, but we're saying in this case it's the integration of NCD prevention, management, and treatment into an already existing health infrastructure, and not adding sort of one vertical program to another, because arguably the HIV community has, and it was interesting to see my colleague's presentation just before me, argued that there is an opportunity for an integration of non-communicable diseases, care and treatment into an already existing HIV/AIDS structure. But that is not necessarily getting at the entire population, which is at risk of chronic diseases. And so we would say it's probably appropriate to integrate a vertical program with a horizontal program. And that is where the focus on women, reproductive and maternal health services, which are pretty extensive and focus on the family and health maintenance and prevention. We think that integrating care and treatment for NCDs and diagnosis, it's a really good idea to think about integrating it into the health system as a whole and using, for example, antenatal care, maternal and child health services as an entry point. And so that, of course, would look like you have reproductive health services sort of and maternal health services provided to the population as a whole. And then you would include NCD prevention, management, and treatment in those services. You have the vertical program integrating with the horizontal program, which gives you a diagonal program. So this is, of course, sort of a theoretical concept in some ways. I suppose it's been talked about in terms of some of the care and treatment in Mexico that Julio Frank has written about recently in The Lancet. But you know, to try to bring it down to a more practical level and to interest practitioners in thinking about this kind of approach, we thought we'd come up with some entry points as to where the integration might best happen. So in primary prevention and health promotion, behavior change education is part of, for example, sexual and reproductive health services. You can talk about doing breast checks if you're talking about using contraception with young women. Secondary prevention and early treatment. So pregnancy is a really great venue because women are coming in and out of the health services very often, hopefully, And, you know, it's becoming increasingly, antenatal care is becoming increasingly prevalent, even in low and middle income countries. We think this is a good entry point. And that's a good time to talk about blood pressure management. It's a good time to talk about diet. It's a good time to talk about healthy eating, because these women are pregnant and they're really concerned about their bodies and they're concerned about their children. Diagnosis, so for example, voluntary counseling and testing for HIVs among pregnant women can be expanded if you have the laboratories and access to those facilities to looking at blood glucose levels or cholesterol to find out if there's any risk factors, for example, for cardiovascular disease. And then finally, treatment management and long-term care, arguably facilities that can do cesarean sections, for example, have operative potential. And so if you do need to treat a woman or anybody for that matter for any kind of cancer, that there would be some facilities available. But, you know, the facilities are one thing, but the human resources are another. And I think it's really important to talk about how we can invest in human resources to make sure that we're not just layering on extra responsibilities and rules and regulations and reporting mechanisms to folks who really just don't have any time to do the work that they're supposed to do now. And so continuing education is really important to get people invested in, interested in, and caring about non-communicable diseases and chronic diseases, even in low and middle income countries, when they're thought to be sort of diseases of affluence. And so incentives to stay also in the country of origin is going to be really important because you know, you need people around who know about this and who can care for patients who do have chronic diseases. And so even if you're diagnosing and treating people with chronic diseases like diabetes or like certain types of cancer, it's unethical, I think we would all agree, that you know, you diagnose them and then you don't have the medication or you don't have the services to treat them. And so reliable supply chains and some infrastructure put in place before you start diagnosing people when you really are going to have to treat them is going to be really important. And so because, again, this is sort of still a theoretical kind of framework that we're talking about in terms of the diagonal approach, it's going to be really important if and when this does get rolled out in some countries and systems, that there is a setup for monitoring and evaluation, because we do want to know, does this work? And so some questions that can be asked are, Does this diagonal approach actually improve or facilitate the provision of and utilization of NCD services? So that's sort of what we're trying to promote here. We're trying to get people diagnosed, treated, and their chronic diseases managed. And so does that happen? And the second thing is then in terms of the horizontal and sort of the broader health system in general, does this have any adverse implications for the health system if, you know, we're asking people to, in addition to checking blood pressure during pregnancy, really thinking about blood pressure in the grand scheme of a woman's life. And so does this diagonal approach not take away from the provision of reproductive and maternal health services as you're sort of trying to attend to more than just the woman's pregnancy, for example. And also really important to think about, does this have any unintended consequences, of course, such as health worker overload or poor quality of care or just too many reporting mechanisms? Again, like, this hasn't really been tried on a widespread basis, and so it's going to be really important, if it is, to be really honest about what the unintended consequences might be. And finally, does it result in any long-term financial or bureaucratic burden? We're trying to, in some ways, streamline services and make things a little bit more efficient and a little bit more wrap around with what we have, with the infrastructure we have. So it is important to think about what the bureaucratic or health services human resources burden might be. And finally, you know, it's going to matter the type of country you're rolling it out in. And so is the population completely rural or is it sort of suburban, urban? Is the health system decentralized? Is it centralized? And so it really is going to be important to consider the context when thinking about what this diagonal approach might look like in specific countries. So, you know, we argue that this is a challenge and an opportunity to really think seriously about the health system and the opportunities and the needs of that very specific country health system, or, you know, more at the local level. And so some final notes. Gains in standard of living, which we've seen sort of all across low and middle income countries, have been increasing, and life expectancy has been increasing with the exception of some countries and HIV/AIDS, for example. And so, you know, not to be too alarmist, but there is some concern that if, you know, incomes continue rising and people become more sedentary and they eat more processed food and all these sort of lifestyle and behavioral issues come to the fore in countries that are still at relatively low levels of development, that these increases in life expectancy may, and standards of living may be in jeopardy. And, you know, of course, NCDs are preventable. These are things that with education, with behavior change, with intervention, with statins, can be overcome. And so, you know, there's obviously a lot of positivity we have in terms of tackling non-communicable diseases. And countries cannot and should not be asked to support another vertical program. I mean, you know, HIV/AIDS has been really, really devastating, but there's been a lot of money poured into it, and it has created, in some instances, alternative health systems where there are clinics where people, some of the health service providers are paid more than in the government hospitals, for example. And so to continue creating siloed health systems for specific diseases is not going to drive improvements in the health system and in the country's infrastructure as a whole. And so we really would argue that in order to tackle very specific diseases or constellations of diseases like non-communicable diseases are, it's really important to attend to the health system more broadly as you're doing it. And then, you know, we obviously want to end with the note that investing in women and families and communities brings high returns. And so I have tons of references. and so I just wanted to thank the Women in Health Initiative at the Harvard School of Public Health and the Office of Population Research, where I am now at Princeton University, without whom I would not be here. So I suppose I can answer some questions if you are confused, or I can, you know, talk to some of you afterwards if you'd prefer that. So thank you. Thank you. Question.
Because we've got something called making every contact count that is exactly, well, probably not exactly, but it's broadly what you're saying. And we are moving public health from the National Health Service to local authorities, part of which is to commission health visitors and school nursing to do exactly what you're saying about the behavior change model. We've got behavior change models, so we're not offering tobacco controllers and isolated intervention into behavior change modeling to physical activity, diet, nutrition, tobacco control, alcohol. So it's all the sort of things that you're describing. So useful to.
It would absolutely be useful to, and we have to a certain extent looked at models from developed countries to understand how these things can be done in developing countries. I think certainly you're absolutely right that what I'm talking about is this theoretical model in terms of the developing country, low and middle income country setting, because these things really haven't been tried, and it's people are uncertain as to the cost benefit analysis types of questions as to whether it is really helpful to strengthen the health system in a country, for example, where the government isn't very strong, or there might be civil conflict in the future. And so, but I think looking at the developed country context is probably going to be really helpful to see how has this been done in other contexts, although they may be completely or relatively different, to learn some lessons from that, I think will be really helpful. Thank you very much for that comment. Question?
So you're talking about doing vertical or diagonal, you know, so that to make sense with the horizontal and vertical and trying to get away from being siloed. But at the same time, you're talking about siloing women and maternal and child health, and which ends up really talking about maternal and child health and leaving out. So, there's a little bit of a
tension
there.
Sure.
So, if you could please talk about that. Also, at the same time, the other question is, if you're looking at, you know, this idea of behavioral change, and you talk about the shifts and, you know, the increase of non-communicable diseases, and the change from, you know, infectious diseases to, you know, and the changes in food, processed foods, which is not necessarily a behavioral issue. It has to do with the countries and the policies that have changed.
Trade.
And
mm-hmm.
What have been the larger pressures to change what people are eating,
mm-hmm.
And how that comes into health, and it's not necessarily a health care, clinical care
mm-hmm.
systems issue. That's another tension that I'm not hearing really addressed.
Sure. Those are wonderful, wonderful points. And it's too bad that I only have 15 minutes to present. But so we sort of see this as a first step, right? Like the after the NCD summit, there was a lot of disappointment in the community of people who work on chronic diseases that there wasn't a lot of action taken. And so we're trying to help in some ways provide ideas about some small steps that can the global health community can start with. And so I think that although there's a tension there with the sort of the focusing on women and you're worrying that that's already vertical in and of itself, I think that we're trying to offer some small ideas and some sort of concrete entry points for the clinical community, and then, you know, certainly we can talk about the health system more broadly in terms of infrastructure and buildings, and then we can talk about the government more broadly in terms of their decisions about trade and financing. But I think we are trying to provide some first step types of ideas, and I think the bid to focus on women's health and maternal health is that it is preventive care in many ways, and it is promoting sort of prevention and health promotion. And so, focusing on women, you know, they are the people who do a lot of the cooking, for example. And so, if you can help them understand the connection between poor health and poor diet, they can help integrate that into their families because they're cooking for their children and their husband and their grandparents, their family's health. And so, again, sort of a first step to addressing chronic diseases. And your second point about the broader issues at sort of the national level in terms of trade, in terms of globalization, in terms of the changes that are happening because of that. Again, you know, 15 minutes and a public health paper isn't necessarily going to address that, but I think talking about chronic diseases and talking about how they are no longer diseases necessarily of affluence, and that the shrinking markets for tobacco and for processed foods in developed countries are bringing those businesses to developing countries. And just, we're trying to promote awareness, I think. I do really appreciate your comments because I think those are discussions that may need to happen at the more national level and with finance ministers and you know, economists, for example, rather than the public health practitioners.
Thank you.
Thank you.